business.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
All right, the two questions we have going into week two of the preseason is, one, did anyone get punched in the face? And did anyone retire? I don't think that happened, so I think we're good. I am Pod Vader, Jay Soderberg.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, that is true.
Dez got punched in the face. I saw a video of it. That actually happened.
That is a good interruption. Thank you very much. That is the voice of Sit Super Fan and host of our Sunday night recap shows. Hello, Sitco.
Hello, how are you doing? Sorry about that, Jay, but when Dez gets punched in the face, it makes me very happy. I had to say that. Thank you, Rams. Thank you, Rams. I appreciate it.
That is very true. The team, which featured the guy who was originally punched in the face and why making the punch in the face joke, is AJ, our Jets super fan. AJ, how are you doing?
I'm good. I mean, I had the over under at about like 60 seconds when someone was going to make a Geno Smith reference. So it's too bad. I bet the over, but I should have expected more from you.
Exactly. And so far things are kind of quiet in Steelers land, or are they, Greg?
Well, you know, Bud Dupree, he likes throwing punches, so we'll see what happens. So
this is what you can expect from us next fan up as we're getting ready to preview two of the NFL preseason. Although, as Greg can attest, this is kind of week three, but the Hall of Fame game, everyone seems to forget about that one. But we'll be going through every single preseason game, starting with Thursday, going chronologically all through Monday. I can't believe there's a Monday night game this week, but we will preview that as well. You can tweet at us at NFU Podcast. You can check us out on Facebook. That's facebook.com/NFU Podcast. All of our super fans have been busy writing up their previews for this week, and you can check out quite a few of them there right now. And of course, you can email us. That is nextfanup@gmail.com. I bring that up because we do, gentlemen, have a Houston Texans application here. This is from James, his first attempt at an application. I don't know, had me a little worried. He's living in Seattle right now. Sort of presented I can read off a Bleacher Report better than Zach Vader can. And I didn't take him seriously, but he did give me a whole preseason game two preview. Maybe I'll check that out when we get to previewing the Houston Texans game. What do you guys think?
Sounds good. We need
good.
The Texans.
I'm glad somebody's on board.
We need the Cardinals super fan too. Yo, Cardinals fans, come please. We need you.
Well, Drew Brooks is on board, but he's not fully on board. And that he's extremely busy with his real job. You people and your real jobs out there. You know, we're probably going to alleviate the responsibilities for Drew Brooks so that he can focus on his real job. And we can focus on our fake job, which is previewing football games. And, you know, that's what we do. I thought I had a nice drop here, but I didn't. So I'll just play a random one.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Thank you, Dennis Green. I appreciate being let off the hook. We'll start with the Thursday night games, and Detroit is at Washington. It kicks off at 7:30, and our Washington super fan writes in that, as a Redskins fan, I continue to be aggravated by RG3. This guy simply doesn't get it and never will get it. Our only hope is that he continues to struggle during the season. I'm actually rooting for our quarterback to do bad, and that Kirk Cousins continues to impress to the point that they will have no other option but to end this RG3 sideshow. So this is an interesting take here from one of our super fans on their team. Greg, I seem to remember you were pretty down on your team when talked about your preseason, weren't you?
The Steelers?
No. You weren't. I'm sorry. I have confused with Tom, the Chicago Bears super fan. He was extremely pessimistic about the Bears' chances this season. I'm sorry to include you with Tom.
Yeah, I'm exactly the opposite. I'm a little bit nuts. So,
Tom's a very smart man because the Bears don't seem to be anything special, especially after the Kevin White injury. So, good on you.
Does anyone hate Cutler? Bears fans. Every Bears fan I know, just anytime I talk to them, they just hate their quarterback. They talk about him how I talk about Romo. It is so fascinating to listen to. But yeah, I agree. I think the Bears are in trouble this year. Going on the response I'm getting from every Bears fan I know.
Well, I mean, it sounds like Drew is as down on RG3 as Bear fans are on Jay Cutler. So we'll have that to look for. Sicko, are you giving me the update from Detroit?
Yeah, I mean, possibly with the Detroit Lions, right? Like the last week, possibly the biggest name in fantasy out of nowhere is this Amir Abdullah. Everybody's really excited about him. So is our super fan. He says, you know, obviously he looked phenomenal last week on his 7 carries, but they want to see if what that will look like in a second game. And can we actually stretch this out? The interesting thing that the super fan brings up is that he's been catching the ball really well in the training camp. But we didn't get to see that in the game last week. So he's really excited. And I think this is interesting. Maybe Amir can be even better than what we saw last week. And he can actually catch the ball as well and just be a top back right off the bat. Is really interesting. It's been a while, right, since the Lions have had a great running back. So maybe Amir is the future there, and it's just, you know, they got a great pick there.
You're not a Kevin Jones fan, Mark? Look.
No. I don't think of Kevin Jones as a top back in the league.
I was being sarcastic.
I was like, man, am I not thinking of somebody? I'm like thinking of Kevin Jones. I'm like, no. Nah. Never really thought of him that strong. But no, I see.
The Lions played the Jets last week, so I actually got to watch Amir Abdullah. I liked him coming into the draft. He was a very well-rounded back. He actually could catch the ball very well out of the backfield. But one of the super fans on last week's podcast, I don't remember one, made a good point. When you watch him, it seems like he gets faster when he goes laterally and when he cuts up field after he makes his break. And that's a very rare thing to see. And yeah. That's why he was getting comparisons to Barry Sanders from my coach Todd Bowles. I mean, that's probably hyperbole after 7 preseason carries, but it's a very good start, and Lions fans should be thrilled with what they've seen so far.
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point. I think it was that top 40 speed at, you know, running a 40-yard dash that he doesn't really impress, and is probably why he wasn't one of the top backs drafted this year. But going from 0 to 10 yards, he's really, really impressive. He has incredible burst, and I think it'll serve him well for him to have a 40-yard run. I think he had a 40-yard run in that game. I mean, obviously, you don't need that top-end speed to go 40 yards. He was able to do it with whatever speed he's got. So, yeah, I think that the Lions have a nice little surprise there, and I think they're excited to see what he can do.
You know, Amir Abdullah was taken in the 5th round of the Blog Talk Radio Fantasy League draft. You're going to be able to hear that draft in the next coming days. He right here on an Up podcast. He was taken by Matt Chatham of Football by Football. He is absolutely in love with Amir Abdullah. And I'll let you listen to that podcast to hear what he has to say about him. We're going to move on, though, to our next next Thursday game, and that is at Cleveland. Greg, I believe you're helping me out on this one.
I'm the Cleveland resident, even though I'm a Steelers fan, so I got the right up here. He's our Cleveland super fan. Rob is saying that, and his write-up is on our Facebook page, essentially that who is going to be the only healthy running back and who's going to be the one that wins the job. So that's one thing that he's looking for, the key. And then another thing is, he posted on a Facebook page was a great video of Danny Shelton just destroying competition at the practice. So he's really excited to see Danny Shelton, their first round pick this year. And then the third thing he's looking for the Browns is this EJ Bibbs, who Rob has kind of outlined as a popular sleeper for their tight end position. He's apparently
that's a real guy.
Yeah, apparently somewhere.
EJ Bibbs.
He's a rookie tight end that's supposedly tearing up camp. Now, it is Browns camp, so we got to segue with that.
Well, and we all know about what it means to tear up camp. The Bill. yes, exactly. Super fan is actually a new super fan, but since you never really got a chance to meet the old Bill super fan, I don't know. Let's just say we have a new Bill super fan. His name is Andrew, and he is writing in saying that they're excited to see Tyrod Taylor after his performance in his debut last week. We'll see how he does with the Buffalo Bills here in week two. Unfortunately for the Bills, he's going to have to work with some unknowns in the backfield as LeSean McCoy is dealing with a hamstring injury. They also lost Florida State rookie Carlos Williams, who was responsible for an unknown medical procedure. Both are expected to be ready for the regular season, but in the meantime, the Bills are down to unknowns at the running back position, basically place fillers until the other guys come back. I'll be interested to see if maybe Ricky Seal or Sierra Wood can get a job here. This is sort of the prime opportunity to make that happen.
Well, that's why there was a report that came out that the Bills were looking into Ray Rice, of all people, to come in. That was quickly shot down, but it just goes to show what the running back situation is in Buffalo right now. But the thing he brought about Tyrod Taylor is a very good point. Last Thursday on this podcast, we were talking about how if the Bills are starting Matt Castle or EJ Manuel, you know what's happening there. You know you're probably going to win maybe 8 games there, and there's no element of the unknown there. There is an element of the unknown with Tyrod Taylor, so having him start the game is definitely the way to go, and Rex Ryan seems to agree with that. And the same thing with the Browns with Josh McCown, you're not going anywhere with Josh McCown. But if Manziel keeps showing improvement like he did last week, maybe you start him and maybe you find a spark. So just looking at those two quarterbacks this week is definitely something to look at.
I think it's interesting that from the sound of from both superfans write ups, it sounds like we might not see a running back that will actually be on a roster in week one play in this game. So
that is a very interesting point, but this is also where that running back, whomever it is that gets that chance, even if he doesn't end up with one of the teams he's playing for, could end up getting picked up as a waiver wire guy down the road. Certainly a huge opportunity for those guys this week. All right, folks, if you have jumped ahead, you're now listening to the Friday previews, and we're going to start with Atlanta, my boyfriends in the NFC, against the most hated team, the New York Jets. AJ, you happen to be the super fan for the Jets.
Yeah, I do. Sometimes I think, unfortunately, but hopefully this year changes some things. But things that I'd be looking at, the obvious thing is Ryan Fitzpatrick. He only played one drive last week. He got a field goal out of it. Probably just because they wanted to keep him healthy after all the crap that went on with Geno Smith that week, just didn't want two quarterbacks going down. So I'd like to see his rapport with Decker and Marshall and those guys to see that they could just move the ball down the field. And the thing that I want to see how Antonio Cromartie responds from a really bad week one preseason, and by most accounts, a pretty shaky training camp. There's going to be a temptation to throw Revis on Julio Jones, but this is the preseason. You have nothing to lose by just throwing Cromartie on him and seeing what happens there. And the last thing that I'd look at is the right guard competition. Right now, the right guard competition is between Willie Colon, Brian Winters, last year's third round pick, Dakota Dozier, and a guy named Brent Quvale. I think that's how you pronounce his name. It's like Q-V-A-L-E. I don't know. It sort of sounds like a generic Madden guy that you get after the first year of the franchise in the NFL draft. By all accounts right now, it seems like Willie Colon is winning that competition. And as Greg can attest to, that is not the thing that you want on your offensive line, because you're probably going to get a penalty every three plays with this guy. He's a good pass protector, but he's not that good in the running game, and he's just going to get a false start at the worst possible time, making a third and eight into like a third and 13. And with Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback, we can't afford to have many of those situations this year. You have any horror stories for me, Greg, about Willie Colon, or am I just misremembering?
No, that's what he's been doing recently. 5 years ago, he was great, but not since then. He's just a walking penalty, and he's got an attitude, which is great when he's an elite player, but otherwise, not so much.
All right. But so that's the thing I'm looking for the Jets, and I have Tim, the Falcons super fans, write up right here. I'm not really fond of how he opens up his write up. He goes, after a great thrashing was had in the first quarter of the Titans preseason game last week, the Falcons set their sight on the next terrible team to face in the preseason, the New York Jets. Tim.
That's fantastic writing, Tim. Keep it up.
Whatever. We'll move on. Well, I'll give you a pass for there, Tim, but don't be punching with the New York Jets. What Tim wants to look at is the running back battle. And for fantasy players, this is probably a topic that they should be looking at, because right now the running back battles between Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman, the second round rookie out of Indiana. Last week, neither of these guys played, and Antoine Smith had an opportunity, but he didn't fulfill what the coaching staff was looking for. So now these two guys are going to be competing for the starting job. Devontae Freeman's more of a shifty type running back, not that fast. He's not that explosive. He doesn't really seem like a special talent to me. Tevin Coleman seems like he's looking for a home run on every single play. And that could be a good thing. That could be a bad thing. But very much like the quarterback situation, like I mentioned in Buffalo and Cleveland, you should be just looking for upside at this point. And Tevin Coleman seems to provide that. And one more thing that Tim's looking at is the backup quarterback position. Tim, if you're thinking about the backup quarterback position at this point, like if Matt Ryan goes out, you're screwed either way. So Sean Renfrey, TJ Yates, however they play, it's really not going to make a difference. But sure, we'll see how they play against the Jets' second string secondary. And so this is after TJ Yates had an awful game last week. So we'll see if he can bounce back.
You know, the other thing, Tim is probably flirting a little too much with the sports gal pal. I know a lot of our super fans have made appearances on her podcast last week as she's doing two-a-day previews on her show. That's blogtalkradio.com/thesportsgalpal. But just to add a few notes here on the Falcons, as I'm looking at reports from Vaughn McClure of ESPN.com, Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman will be game time decisions against the Jets. They're both working their way back from hamstring strains. Hamstring strains, by the way, seem to be rather popular during this preseason. Also, Antoine Smith has been ruled out or is unlikely to play, also dealing with a hamstring injury. So, you know, if you got a hamstring, it's probably injured.
Or if you're a running back, you're probably injured.
Yeah, there's that too. The other game we got Friday night is Seattle at Kansas City. Sitko, what can you tell me about what's going on here in this one?
What's really interesting there is the our superman brings up his argument is that what's really the trouble in Kansas City is the offensive line and not the wide receivers. And I find that fascinating because Andy Reid, as you know, used to be the Eagles coach for a long time, and he's an offensive line guy. When he came to Philly, the very first thing he did was bring in a free agent. He's slipping. Of course, going to be like, not on the tip of my tongue right now. Give me a second. I'll find it. Oh, man. He brought in his left tackle right away. He brings and made sure that he had his bookend tackles and he had his offensive line all set up and ready to go. And for him to be in his third year in Kansas City and have the offensive line still in flux, I find that fascinating. I just think it's going to be a real trouble for them. I think of them as a running team with trying to manage an offense with passing. And if you don't have an offensive line, running the ball is very difficult. So that's really all we have there, is that the offensive line is flux and they're trying to figure it out. I would love to talk with the Kansas City superfan and ask some questions about how jacked up that line is and how far they are from having a solid unit. But he basically was going so far to say in his write-up that without that offensive line being fixed, bringing in Macklin is going to do nothing for them, which I thought was really interesting. And obviously, going against Seattle, that offensive line will be tested.
I'll tell you what else Macklin won't do for them. If you have Alex Smith trying to hit him deep, not going to be helping them either. So the thing that Kansas City is counting for on the offensive line is for Eric Fisher, the number one overall pick a couple of years ago, was to make a leap this year. But if he doesn't, the only above average player they have on that line is Ben Grubbs. So I'd be very concerned if I was a Kansas City fan. And it seems like our super fan Nick shares that sentiment.
I just have to say, that was John Runyon that I was trying to think of the name of, our right tackle, that he was the very first free agent that Andy picked up. I feel ashamed, John. I'm sorry. He's one of my favorite players, actually, an incredible right tackle. But obviously the offensive line will be very important for them. And I didn't know that. I had not heard the offensive line was the major trouble.
All right, moving now to our Saturday games. If you've skipped ahead, that's where we're at. Saturday. Greg, what do we have working here in the Miami Carolina game?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing, storyline just developed yesterday, right? Calvin Benjamin went down with his ACL tear. So I think the spotlight's going to be on Devin Funches if he's able to play in the game. What can he do as being the top rookie pick for them this year at wide receiver? Then they got Philly Brown and all those other guys that are going to be vying for playing time in Carolina. So that's going to be fascinating to watch.
Jimmy Six, speaking of which, Jimmy Six, our super fan, wrote in. He didn't do it as part of his write-in today. It was just actually in Slack, just one of his comments. He mentioned that he thinks that now that Benjamin's gone, he wasn't worried because he said Funchess is going to come in and just replace Benjamin what he did last year. I think that's very presumptuous. What do you guys think? I was like, whoa. Like, as soon as I saw that he got hurt, I was like, oh, Carolina's season is over. You know, like, they had any chance, it was that they'd have some offensive weapons. But without that, and I don't think Funchess is Kevin Benjamin. I think that's a huge difference. I didn't really like Funchess this year in the draft because he's slow. He's just not – he has no separation. He's going to have to jump up and win every ball, and he's not Odell Beckham Jr. So I just thought that was a presumptuous comment.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I'll say this for Jimmy. Like, I'm very envious of his optimism because all of that has been beaten out of me as my years as a Jet fan. So the fact that he could think that that Devin Funchess could come in and immediately replace a Pro Bowl caliber rookie season like Kelvin Benjamin had last year is it's very nice that he thinks that way. But right after this happened, I had an interesting, I just wanted to do a little thought experiment. I looked at every receiving depth chart in the league, and I wanted to see the gap between the number one receiver and the second receiver. What if the number one receiver on a certain team happened to go out, who would replace him, and like the biggest gap between them? There was only one team that I found that could even come close to what Carolina is going to go through right now. That's the team we just spoke about, Kansas City. If Jeremy Macklin went out, Albert Wilson would be the number one receiver. But now that like Kelvin's out, they have Devin Funchess, Philly Brown, and Ted Ginn to play wide receiver. Maybe they bring in a veteran like Reggie Wayne or Santonio Holmes or even Pod's boy Wes Welker to play the slot. But regardless of what they do, they're not going to be able Welker's to. Regardless of what they do, they're not going to be able to replace that that production that Kelvin Benjamin gave him last year, and I think this might be a death blow to Carolina's season.
It's absolutely going to be kill their season because no one saw Benjamin doing what he did last year, let alone Funchess this year. I mean, Benjamin's entire rookie campaign was, I mean, everyone was down on him last year when we were heading into the fantasy drafts. And I know that's not what we're mainly talking about, but nobody believed the hype around him that he was worth a first round draft pick. And he totally proved it last year. But Funchess, I mean, to say you're going to hit gold 2 years in a row is just crazy.
Well, on the Miami side, I don't know if our super fan Ron put this in his write-up or not, but Louis Delmas is out now as well. And the Dolphins will be looking at backup safeties, Walt Akins and Michael Thomas. And I just got to ask who? Anybody know those? I don't.
That's a shame. He tore the same practice as Kelvin, right? I think those happened within an hour of each other, which is just really unfortunate.
I was going to say EJ Bibbs sounds like a more real guy than those two guys.
That is well done.
Ron also said his other comment on the game that I thought was interesting is he says that Tannehill is looking a lot more consistent. And as he said, he is feasting in practice. And so he'd like to see more of that on the game, which is interesting. I mean, if Tannehill can be more consistent, I do think that improves the Dolphins' chances quite a bit.
Well, yeah, he won't get to face the Dolphins secondary every week either, though.
That's funny.
Yeah, but he does get to face the Patriots secondary twice a year, so he gets that to look forward to. We'll talk about that in a moment.
He gets to face the part of the Pats defense that's now on the Jets, Revis.
yeah. Sicko, let's stick to a team that you know a little bit better, and that's your Philadelphia Eagles. You're hosting the Baltimore Ravens. Rex was going to join us today, but he's at work, so we let him stay at work. Again, real jobs, people. What is this with real jobs? Mark, what are you looking forward to in this?
The big one is Sam Bradford, I think, is going to finally play. So that's huge. I think it was smart not to play him last week. The main reason being, I think Bradford was ready, but since he was only going to get a series or so, and we're trying to figure out what's going on at right guard, it made sense to let him sit back, and we'll just let, you know, we'll have our guard come in this time. Now we have kind of gotten more set. We have Alan Barbary at left guard. Now it looks like it's going to be Andrew Gardner at right guard. Our offensive line is set. Bradford will start. And it's really just to see how he does. Does he look more accurate? And does he have a better arm than Foles and Sanchez? Or is he just another quarterback who has trouble getting the ball to the open receiver in this offense? And we'll kind of see how that goes. But I think he will show well. I think he'll have a good game. And I think the entire, you know, we just want to see if he can take a hit and be okay. The other side on defense, we're going to get our entire inside linebacker core back for this game. So last week, we did not have Kiko because of a concussion. We didn't have D'Amico and Kendricks because they were still coming off injury, and they're also bringing them back easily. And so all three of those guys should be out there this week. We'll get an idea of how they're going to play those guys. And I hope Kiko lights up some of the Ravens. That'd be great. I think Kiko's going to throw some blows. So that's really all the focus. I think it'll be a good game. We've been practicing with the Ravens all week. I loved, so I don't know if you guys saw this, but so Steve Smith got interviewed, and they asked Steve Smith, this is like at the Eagles practice. They're like, hey, Steve, like, you like being here? Is this great? You know, what do you think of these joint practices? And I'm just going to read you his quote because it's amazing. He says, no, I'd rather be at home because you asked me my opinion. I'd rather be at home. Today's my wife's birthday, so I'm not at home. I'm out here with this BS. He actually said the word, though. And I'm missing my wife's birthday. That's my honest opinion. I'd rather be at home singing happy birthday to my wife, but I'm out here getting questions to assess some rookie corner. And he's talking, the rookie corner he's talking about is our new rookie, Eric Rowe. And just before that play, he had caught a touchdown and Eric Rowe ripped the ball out. And Steve Smith was pretty pissed about that. And he basically says he's going to get his on Saturday and make this rookie look bad. But Steve Smith's an awesome challenge for Byron Maxwell and for Brett Rowe to play against. It's just fun. Go ahead.
Well, let's add to that quote, because when Steve Smith gets a microphone shoved in his face, he likes to open it. And he added, he made a play. You can write whatever you want. You're going to find out.
Yes, exactly. It's amazing. I can tell you right. Players. Go ahead.
I'm going to tell you right now, I guarantee we're going to have a Steve Smith drop on the board at some point this season. It's a guarantee.
I didn't realize that players still talk like, when I read it, I thought it was like an Onion article. The way he was talking to the reporter, I was like, wait, is this real? I've never seen a player just go off like this in a long time, but I love it. Steve Smith's great. He's an amazing player. I love the attitude. That's probably the last person I'd ever want to fight. I think if I was going to get in a fist fight with somebody, yeah, Steve Smith is a tough little dude, man. That guy is really impressive.
Yeah, but you said the key word there. He's little. I'll take on Steve Smith.
Todd, I love that you just said that. Please, nuts. Someday. Steve, hear that. Come, Todd versus Steve.
All right. AJ, let's move on now to Chicago at Indianapolis. What are we looking at in this one?
The thing that I'm interested to look at is how they replace Kevin White in the skill positions, because we were talking about it before. The one place on this roster that seems set was the skill guys, with Forte, with Jeffrey, with Martellus Bennett, with Eddie Royal in the slot, and with Kevin White on the other outside receiver. But now that Kevin White is gone, that just further depletes that strength. And I just want to see how they're going to be able to place that. Yeah, he's a rookie, so they never had him in the first place. So that's like, I guess, the Jimmy Six point of view, if you want to look at it optimistically. But it doesn't seem like things are going well in Chicago. And the other thing that's interesting is that with all these training camp fights recently, the Bears and Colts just recently had a joint practice, and the head coaches, Chuck Pagano and John Fox, respectively, said that there will be no fighting. If there is a fighting, we will kick you out. Chuck Pagano actually kicked out a couple of guys recently at a practice for fighting. So I want to see if that spills over into the game.
So with the Chicago Bears, the really interesting thing is with the safeties. So last week they started Brock Vereen, and he, I guess, looked really slow and wasn't getting it done. And so they wanted to bring in Ryan Mundy, but now they're actually – Ryan's not doing well, so they're going to bring in the rookie, Adrian Amos. And so that's interesting. It seems that they're really trying to find out who's going to be that second safety spot, and they're having trouble filling the role. Maybe Adrian, as a rookie, will step up and do it. We shall see. As I mentioned earlier, he mentioned in his post that our super fan Tom for the Chicago Bears mentioned that he hates Cutler and he sucks, basically. He looked very slow last week, and he's hoping he'll be better this week. The other thing I thought really interesting was a battle for the outside linebacker. And he just mentioned in that Jared Allen is in the mix there. And it just made me sad for Jared Allen. I think of Jared Allen as one of the best 4-3 defensive end rushers. And taking a player like that, who's really his whole career just bending that edge, and having him play outside linebacker, I think it's a real challenge for him. So it didn't surprise me to see that he's maybe not able to hold the job down. But it looks like what's happening is, for Chicago, they're trying to figure out some spots on defense, and they're hoping Cutler will not be the jerk, bad player that he has been in the past.
So our Colts super fan is going to feel shame right now, as I have a write-up here for the Indianapolis Colts. And from what I can see in the press, there's not really a whole heck of a lot going on there. Mike Wells mentions Jarrell Freeman making a comment about fighting. So, AJ, you're right on top of that one, as far as I'm concerned. And as far as anyone else is concerned, because preseason. Moving on now to a game which concerns me a lot more, and that's the New England Patriots at the New Orleans Saints. These teams have been practicing against each other. Tom Brady still, of course, trying to deal with the fallout of Ballgazi, or as most people know it, as Deflategate. Ballgazi is funnier and more appropriate. It does appear, from the things I'm reading, gentlemen, it does appear that Tom Brady is going to get off on this one, as this judge appears to be very suspicious about the quote unquote evidence presented against Tom Brady, because there is not.
So are you expecting no suspension? You think he'll get all four games off, or what do you think will happen, Pod?
No, because the other thing I'm reading about this judge is he seems to be also focusing on the fact that Tom Brady did not willingly comply with the investigation, which, if we go all the way back to when the Wells report first came out, that's exactly what I said Tom Brady should be suspended for. And four games, while I said at the time I could live with because there was precedent, does seem to be a little extreme when you compare it to some of the punishments other players have gotten for discretions that are of a more major kind. And I'll leave it at that. Ultimately, I do think Tom Brady's going to get off here with a 1 or 2 game suspension and not a 4 game suspension. The NFL is going to be really upset. But I can in all sorts of different angles. I read another article about where Roger Goodell and the NFL's mishandling of the whole thing is ultimately making them look weak. And perhaps the judge looks at that and goes, well, do I really weaken, you know, this organization's power? There's so many different angles on this story point. And next time, Roger Goodell is going to really think about finding a true independent investigator and a guy who will actually find true evidence before he, you know, puts out some sort of punishment. It's all about the power of suggestion. If enough guys want something to be true, it's going to be true, or if it's true or not. It's called the big lie. Now, back to the game.
There's a football game going on.
back to the game. I'm still going to be watching Jimmy Garoppolo. Even though Brady's suspension is going to be shortened in some manner, he's still going to be important. And I want to see if he can be the future of this organization. At this point, I am not sold. He still, to me, doesn't look all that great in practice. The New Orleans Saints. Let's see what Chase here has written up on the Saints. He's also concerned about injuries, the injury bug, very prevalent. This is going to be the first preseason view of Drew Brees. He wants to see the chemistry. He's reportedly built Brandon Coleman at wide receiver because it looks like Coleman may be the number three wide receiver and not Nick Toon. Chase has mentioned that Nick Toon is one of those guys that the fans love down there in New Orleans. So that'll be what he's watching for. I'll be watching that secondary, as I mentioned earlier as well. Malcolm Butler appeared to play extremely well against the Green Bay Packers first unit on the series that the Packers had. However, reports out of practice, the joint practices against the Saints, they've been picking on him and they've been I'm sort of interested to see which Malcolm Butler will show up this Saturday. Anybody else want to throw in 2 cents on this game? Then moving on.
Can we move back real quick, Pod? I think you skipped one. I know it's Jacksonville and all, but they deserve some time with the Giants, according to your schedule.
All right. Very well. Greg, go right ahead and talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars and the New York Giants.
Since I'm overly prepared, I don't see either one of the write-ups. But, I'll be looking, maybe not in the game but anything, but I'm watching Victor Cruz. But I don't think he'll play today, but I'm watching his status. And I'm also fascinated on the Jacksonville side just with all their young offensive players they have. And Gabbert and Robinson and Yeldon. I just want to see how all they look in general. Or not Gabbert.
I think he just gave Ryan a heart attack. A Jaguars super fan. It's like, wait, what? It's like 2012 right now.
They're like the same guy, right? So it doesn't really matter. But.
I thought Jacksonville looked really good. I watched their first preseason game, and they look like a football team. That's like the compliment I would give them. I was like, oh wow, they actually like are moving the ball, and you know, like they seem to have their game together. They look better than I would have ever expected, especially offensively. I know their defense can get things done, but offensively, they look like they're a real professional team. I think they will not be one of the worst five teams in the league this year. I think they have a chance to be better than that.
That's high praise. A guy that I really like on Jacksonville is their rookie running back, TJ Yeldon. He just seems like a very well-rounded player. Could play all three downs, pass block, pass, catch ball out of the backfield. And the Jaguars offensive line has talent on it. A guy like Brandon Linder at right guard to open up some holes. So I think, they still might be one of the five worst teams, but I don't see them picking number one this year.
No, I don't think they will either. And TJ Yeldon, according to this report from Mike DiRocco of ESPN.com, will be making his debut against the Giants, coming back from a sprained hand. By the way, both are Jaguar Giants superfans feel shame because they didn't present write-ups. And if they did, we don't have them. And for the Giants, they're watching their wide receiving core as their top three wide receivers sat out Wednesday practice. Odell Beckham Jr. should be fine. He sat out because he had some dental work done, apparently. I think he got punched in the mouth or anything, but he'll be fine. And Ruben Randall and Victor Cruz are unlikely to play Saturday, even if they do return to practice on Thursday night. Victor Cruz with that calf injury and Ruben Randall dealing with a knee.
This Eli Manning character over here saying that a report came out that Eli Manning wants to be the highest paid player in football. And then Eli himself comes out like, I never said that. So we all know what's going on here. It's just agents working through the media. But do you guys think there's any chance that Eli Manning is going to be the highest paid player in football starting this year?
I do. I think it's because he's the next contract up. He's at quarterback, and all the other guys have set the bar. So I think he'll beat them out by, I don't know, maybe even just like $100,000. But I do think he'll become the highest paid player for one offseason.
Wow, it is really scary. They're just in a horrible position because who wants to do that? Who wants to pay Eli Manning $20 million a year right now? He's not worth that. I'm sorry. I respect Eli. He had an incredible career, but that career is waning. It is over. And I understand they have to do it because what are they going to do? If they try to find another quarterback, the whole system falls apart. Coughlin loses his job. I get it. They don't want to waste it with ODB. But there is no way in hell that he is worth what anybody who – like Russell Wilson is signing right now, Philip Rivers even is signing. There's just no comparison. I think Eli is much further to the end of his career compared to those other guys, and he's going to make that money. I don't think he'll be the highest paid. I think he'll get up there, though. He'll be at $20 million a year. He'll be in that club, which is less than 10 quarterbacks right now, but he'll become one of them. And I think it's really that it's a bad idea. They're going to pay him for probably, 3 years, probably. They're going to put it out. So we go into when he's about 38. If you look at his numbers, he had great numbers last year, even though they didn't do well. But if you just go back a year before, it was really ugly. I think right. He's inconsistent. I think there's a lot of troubles. I'll put it this way. I'm not worried about the Giants being competitive before Eli and Tom Coughlin retire. And so all I'm doing is every year those guys are still there is just wasted time that they're not a competition in the NFC East. And it's unless they go 9-7 and have a chance as a wild card again, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I was going to say Tom Coughlin's time in New York should have been over a while ago. So it might actually be a blessing in disguise if Coughlin were to leave. I will say for Eli, while he said in the press, he never said that. What else does he say? The second thing is he is brothers with Peyton Manning, and Peyton did take a pay cut this past season so that his team could make some additions. If Eli feels confident enough in the Giants organization, I don't know why he would, but if he did, I will give him the benefit of the doubt that he would do the same as his brother has done. But at the same time, Peyton has also been one of the top paid quarterbacks in this league for a long time as well. It could go either way, but I'll give Eli the benefit of the doubt, and I will say he will not be the number one quarterback in the NFL next season.
Yeah, the bottom line is if he hits the free agency, if he hits the open market, someone is going to pay him. The Giants have no choice. But what Mark was saying about 2 years ago, Eli Manning had a really bad year. Yeah, he had 18 touchdowns versus 27 interceptions. But that's 1 year in a 10 to 11 year career. You could nitpick and take 1 year out of many guys' careers and say that. But you have to look at it in context. Last year, Ben McAdoo, the new offensive coordinator, comes in, installs a new quick-hitting passing system, and he has weapons in Odell Beckham. Hopefully Victor Cruz comes back from that knee injury. He looks pretty good on Ballers, if anyone's watching that. They have Reuben Randall and Larry Donnell. But if the most important thing in this league is having a quarterback that you know could win a Super Bowl for you, that it will be good enough, competent enough to win for you. And Eli Manning has proved that twice. And I'm sorry to bring that up, Pod. I mean, sorry, not sorry. But he definitely shown that he has the ability to lead a team to where they want to go. And I think that's worth whatever he wants. Whatever he wants to be paid, that's what they should pay him.
How about this? We always say the quarterback in there, we always tie wins to the quarterback. So his stats are all great, but he's the kind of guy whose his stats look great because they're always playing from behind because he hasn't done well earlier in the game. And then they're throwing a ton, so he gets tons of yardage and tons of touchdowns. But he's kind of the garbage quarterback, like garbage time quarterback. Like that's where a lot of his yards and stats come from. If we want to talk about just wins, he hasn't won more than 10 games since 2008. Since 2010, his win totals have been 10, 9, 9, 7, 6. I mean, that's a straight line to hell. He's just going down. I don't know. I just think and that is, he's just falling apart. He doesn't deserve this money. $20 million a year. He's got, I think it's crazy. And if we look at him and his brother, to even compare them, I mean, which one's the runt in that litter? Are you kidding me? Like,
yeah, look, Mark, you're preaching to the choir here. Straight I'm a fan.
What the hell? That is tweetable right there.
That's a drop.
I mean, that's going down. I'm just saying. I don't know. I think I have respect, and they definitely can get 9-7 and have a chance. You know, they can make a run. Coughlin is a great coach, and Eli Manning can throw some great balls. I don't think the team is there around them, and I don't think he's worth that money. But like you said, you're exactly right. They have to pay him. They're caught in a complete trap. There's no other way out. He's going to get that contract, and it's just going to go down that way. I think it's interesting if he would actually take that pay cut. I just don't see it happening, but that would be amazing. I mean, that'd be great.
I only got two quick things to add for you guys. One is for Eli, Greg, want to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. So I don't blame him at all. And two, the Browns would pay him $50 million just to show up for training camp. Like, they're so starved. Man. All these other teams in the league are so starved. Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. They have to pay him whatever he wants.
If they want to keep him. I think that comes down to, you know, what happens at the end of the season. If the Giants are another six win team or worse, you know, that would lead to them, you know, perhaps letting him go and rebuilding from the top. You're not going to be able to rebuild that team around Eli Manning.
Right. But you can't also lose him for nothing. So you'll get a third round compensatory pick. But perhaps you franchise him and then you try to trade him from there. But you can't just let him walk.
Well, and because we've seen the franchise trade happen so often.
But even McNabb got like 2 seconds when he was washed up from the Eagles to the Wolves to Washington. You know, there's a market there for the aging quarterback.
It'll be an interesting watch in terms of Eli Manning's contract. All right, we got 7 more games to try and rummage through here, gentlemen. I don't know who's up next, but we've got Oakland at Minnesota. Whomever's got this game, go.
I can jump in on Oakland. The big thing there is really, which I thought was an interesting observation, that what they want to see is our superfan really wants to see Carr and Cooper set up a nice connection in the red zone. They're already looking good. They're making some good completions, but I guess they were stalling out when they got to the line. So if they can get to the red zone and they can put some balls in, that connection can happen. I think that would look really good for the Raiders. Minnesota, yeah, I thought, looked awesome. I mean, I thought Minnesota looked very frightening. They, like you've said, and you know, I know you think they're looking good this offseason, Pod. They were frightening. Their offense looked very, very legit. I don't even think Adrian Peterson was playing in that game, but they looked very, very good.
Yeah.
You're joking, Peterson, right? I've been so down on the Vikings, it's not even funny.
Oh, I'm confusing you because the Falcons are your team. You are not with the Vikings. I'm thinking of other Raiders, I know. Yes, yes.
The Vikings seem like the popular pick to make a leap this year. So you're not on the Vikings, Pod.
I'm not on the Vikings. I'm not believing in Teddy Bridgewater. I would like to, you know, we'll see he's a second year quarterback. No, second year quarterbacks, sometimes they make the times they don't. Oftentimes they don't. They're still playing outdoors this season. You know, there's a lot of question marks remaining in Minnesota for me. And, you know, we're looking at sorting out their middle linebacker situation. Buddy Cole, Gerald Hodges, and Eric Kendricks have all gotten first team work this week in practice. And like all three are likely going to rotate on Saturday night. So the Vikings, to me, are the darling team, don't seem to understand. But let's move on now to Eli's brother, Peyton, who brings the Denver Broncos to Houston. We don't currently have a Texans super fan, but we do have this emailed in from James, who it writes us that the running back situation will need to find greater success. Obviously, Arian Foster going down. Alfred Blue looked better in the first preseason game. Hopefully it's a sign of his progress from last year. However, neither Hilliard nor Polk looked like a player that could reliably either split carries with or provide a rest for Blue. So that is going to be something to watch. Ryan Mallett will start this game, which will hopefully allow him to differentiate himself from Brian Hoyer and win the starting job. He mentions Hoyer is a good plan, but his ceiling is known. I would argue that Ryan Mallett's ceiling is pretty much known as well. I think Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett are the perfect interchangeable quarterback, even though they do have some differences in their style of play. If Vince Wilfork plays, it'll be interesting to see his impact on the run defense. And by, and doesn't say this, but by interesting, I mean run defense will be enormous. There's nobody's going to run on that Houston line if Vince Wilfork is playing. And the defensive secondary will need to show that they haven't missed a beat after losing DJ Swearinger and bringing in Raheem Moore. Well, good luck. That's the way I look at it from the Houston Texans point of view.
So I have this game for the Broncos and the Texans. Our Broncos super fan says the things that he's looking at, his Peyton Manning's preseason debut with Gary Kubiak coach. So he wants to see how much Peyton's audible-ing at the line and how much control. Whoa, everybody all right there.
There's some crazy noise going on in the background.
So Peyton Manning, it's going to be interesting to see how he plays in this offense, because Kubiak in his offense uses a lot of rollouts, a lot. He likes having mobile quarterbacks. So I want to see how Peyton responds if he changes the play at the line, if he stays in the pocket, that type of thing. And the other thing that that our super fan wants to see is Brock Osweiler. He had a very good debut last week when Peyton sat. So Osweiler was playing against the first team, and he played very well. He's been playing against the second team this week, so hopefully he keeps that up. And you mentioned that we don't have a Texans super fan, so I just think this would be an opportunity to talk about Hard Knocks. I don't know if you guys saw it, but this week was an extremely entertaining episode. There were two things that I just want to mention. One, we were just talking about the Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett thing. So they were showing the clips of the first preseason game, and it was a 3rd and 4, and Ryan Mallett's under center, and Ryan Mallett runs a quarterback sneak on 3rd and 4, which I've never seen before. And Mallett comes back to the sideline, and Bill O'Brien gets in his face. And I mean, he doesn't get in his face. That sounds a little hostile, but he makes it known to him, like, what are you doing? Mallett said, like, oh, yeah, I thought I heard quarterback sneak. He's like, why would we run quarterback 3rd and 4? If you think that's the play, you switch it up. You should switch it up. So there have always been rumors that Ryan Mallett's not the sharpest tool in the shed. So maybe that gives Hoyer the advantage there. And the second thing that stood out was, Brian Cushing is a crazy person. Is an absolute crazy person. he's just knocking into Alfred Blue, like, on purpose. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. Just constantly just running into him, knocking him over. He's talking to DeAndre Hopkins. The conversation went like this. DeAndre Hopkins goes, do you drink lattes? Brian goes, I don't even go to Starbucks. He's like, I mean, I used to, and then I realized I wasn't a chick. But, Brian Cushing... he's been popped for PEDs before, and I guess this gives paints a picture of why that actually occurred, or how that might have affected him, because I mean, he's entertaining, so I can't really complain. It's sort of like pro wrestling, and that's sort of what you want with Hard Knocks. So if you guys want to see this entertainment, tune in next week. Well, who knows what's going to happen.
All right, our last game here on Saturday is the San Diego Chargers at the Arizona Cardinals. Melvin Gordon expected to get a few more touches in San Diego. By the way, neither superfan wrote write-ups for this, gentlemen. But in Arizona, Mike Iupati will miss 6 to 8 weeks after getting knee surgery. That's a big blow there to the Cardinals' offensive line. AJ, you said you had a few thoughts on this.
Yeah. I mean, Iupati is going around the league as a top-tier guard. He's a mauler in the run game. He's going to help that running game, Andre Ellington and David Johnson, a ton if he was healthy. But he was always sort of a liability in the passing game. So it'd be interesting to see whoever steps up there, how they play. But there just always seems to be something going on the Cardinals offensive line. Bobby Massey is hurt. Jonathan Cooper is about to start like playing for the first time since being taken eighth overall a couple years ago. So it's just interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if they could protect Carson Palmer, be able to get the ball down the field to their bunch of weapons they have in Michael Floyd, Fitzgerald, and John Brown. And you were talking about Melvin Gordon for the Cardinals. I mean, for the Chargers, excuse me. So Melvin Gordon was a top huge prospect in the draft. They ended up taking 16th overall. He, Melvin Gordon, the way he runs is that he sort of dances in the backfield a lot. He doesn't wait for his holes to come open. He waits for a hole to come open that won't be there. Like in college, maybe the hole opens up, but in the NFL, someone's going to get in the backfield before the hole opens up. So you got to hit that hard. And to his credit, he came out and actually said that, yeah, I got to be more decisive in my reads and what I do. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he responds this week, because a lot of fantasy owners are counting on him this year to break out in a big way.
And, you know, we were talking about Eli Manning being the highest paid quarterback. That was all. Philip Rivers is now currently the quarterback. Most guaranteed money on his contract. So, you know, congratulations to Philip Rivers. Doesn't look like he's leaving the Chargers, as we sort of all were talking about earlier this preseason. Philip Rivers and the Mariners Chargers seem to be a little bit on the rocks. Seems like that's all been taken care of with a little bit of green. And we won't be seeing Philip Rivers away from the Chargers anytime soon. All right. If you've jumped ahead, congratulations. You're now on the Sunday games. I recommend that you go back, though. I'll start, though, with Green Bay at Pittsburgh. And Greg, Pittsburgh Steelers, that sounds like that's your team.
Yeah, but we'll start with the Packers here. We'll give Brian, our super fan for the Packers, his due right off the bat before I go on a tangent. But Brian's looking forward to watching the left tackle position, because apparently – a man who must not be named because his name's too hard to pronounce was playing left tackle for them, and he wasn't playing well enough. So Barclay is going to come in and try to start again after he's recovering from an ACL tear. And then Brian will also be watching the inside linebacker play, as they have a new rookie, Jake Ryan, that looks like he is worth taking some first team snaps. He's also looking forward to seeing the rookie cornerbacks play. He thinks that Rollins, who they took this past year, might be a potential starter down the road this season. So now that we've given the 13-time champion Packers their due, the Steelers, I'm really looking forward to watching what Keith Butler does with the defense, and as he transitions away from Dick LeBeau. I don't know what this whole terminology means of one gap versus two gap, really, for the 3-4, but the Steelers are transitioning to a one gap, which supposedly going to make them more attacking up front. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what that means. And he's also going to change the coverage on the back end. Then the Steelers had a heated practice yesterday where Bud Dupree supposedly got in. Reports vary from two to three fights with the different offensive linemen they was going up against. And he actually apparently threw a punch at James Harrison, which is never a good idea when Harrison tried to step in. So I'm really interested to see what Dupree does, because he's been disappointing in the games so far this year, since they have the extra game from playing the Hall of Fame game. He's been a stud supposedly at training camp, but I'm really looking forward to see what he brings to the game. And then the third thing I'm going to look for is Villanueva, who was our D end that transitioned to left tackle. He's been really impressive so far. And I'm just hoping that he continues and maybe can beat out Mike Adams for the swing tackle spot on the roster.
Yeah, just a quick thing about the one gap, two gap situation. So in a two gap system, you're looking for your defensive lineman in the 3-4 to eat up two blockers to allow your linebackers on the back end to be able to get a free run at the quarterback or get a one-on-one situation. In the one gap system, they're looking for guys like Cameron Hayward to penetrate by themselves and not eat up two blockers. It's sort of like Richard Seymour. Richard Seymour never got a ton of credit for what he had to do, because he always had to, he always had two guys blocking him, which is why Matt Williamson always thought that Richard Seymour is a Hall of Famer, but yet Pod never really agreed with that because you didn't really show up on the stat sheet. But so it seems like if you're looking for a guy to step up into the what? I'm sorry.
That's not 100% true. That's not an accurate portrayal of my thoughts on Richard Seymour.
Richard Seymour is a
great player. I just don't know if he's a Hall of Famer. Not necessarily because his stats don't show up. More because, I guess it is a little bit because he doesn't have any real stats to sort of show exactly how fantastic Richard Seymour was. I honestly never really saw it in Richard Seymour. I thought Wilf wore a bigger than Seymour was. But, you know, guys that have played against him have said I'm wrong. So I have to go with those guys. That's glad a guy, by the way, I would not want to get into a fight with. Richard Seymour would crush me
fairly quickly.
Or James Harrison, Dupree.
But Steve Smith has no shot.
What about you and Steve Smith versus Richard Seymour? How about that? Tag team.
I think we're still dead. I think Richard Seymour can crush us both fairly easily with his pinky finger. There is one thing. Seymour, he is a big man, and not like big Vince Wilfork big, but big in like he is jacked. I would not mess with Richard Seymour. St. Louis, by the way, the other thing about Richard Seymour is he's a lot more vicious than he comes off as. You know, most people look at Richard Seymour, he tends to be kind of quiet, reserved. When he was on the field, he was a beast. St. Louis Rams at Tennessee Titans. Who's got something on this one?
The big thing that I have is just that Rob Havenstein, their tackle, their new rookie tackle, is the big thing that the St. Louis Rams want to look at and see how he does. Obviously, Foles did okay, and I'm sure they'd all like to see him do better, but he did look okay in his first game. He only had like a short series, so they'd like to see him play at least like three series, maybe even a whole half, and really see if Foles is clicking in that offense.
And the thing that I'd be looking at the Titans side, besides the obvious Marcus Mariota situation, is I want to see David Cobb play running back, because I can't watch Bishop Sankey anymore. He is the most he's the most bleh, like generic running back.
I agree. I think Bishop Sankey has definitely been one of the most overrated guys, just like the St. Louis Rams are probably one of the most overrated teams right now in the NFL. I don't get it why they're the darlings. They don't appear to be anything to watch for. And as I'm reading this report here about what Jeff Fisher did for the team, he canceled Wednesday practice because he called them a quote tired team. If you're tired already, I could only imagine what your team would have been like back in the day when there were two-a-days. I mean, give me a break.
Chip Kelly and Sports Science are laughing their asses off.
Yes, exactly.
We've had two training camps compared to this already, and yeah, we're fine. We're going to take you down, Rams. Joke. Do you think the Rams, it's interesting, can the Rams be the second best team in that division, though? I mean, we all think, right, Seattle's the team to beat there. Could the Rams, I know you don't, doesn't sound like you think so, Pod Vader, but anybody else, do we think the Rams could pass the Cardinals? The Niners look on the way down. Could this be the year that the Rams are actually competitive a little bit, maybe? Right. I don't know.
The Niners are the last place team in that division.
You think for sure?
Yeah.
I think for sure.
If there's a year it's going to happen, it's going to be this year, because the Cardinals with their injuries and just seems like they got were very fortunate last year in a bunch of aspects. Like Bill Barnwell wrote a very good article about this. Also one about the Rams. If there's a year that the Rams are going to make a leap, it's going to be this year. And if it's not this year, then I'd be very surprised to see Jeff Fisher still roaming the sidelines now.
How crazy would it be if the end of the season, right, Russell Wilson blows an ACL in second week and St. Louis Rams run away with this division? That's possible. That is not impossible. But, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I don't like that idea. Speaking of the 49ers. They're next up on Sunday night. They're hosting Dallas. This is one of those matchups back in the day. People be like, oh, it's Dallas and San Francisco. And now we're like, ooh, it's Dallas at San Francisco. What do our super fans have to say about this one?
All right. So our 49er super fan, Charles, the first thing he wants to talk about is Jarryd Hayne, the rugby superstar Australia. He's been a sensation so far. He's been breaking off long runs. It does seem that he is a little raw and that he's running very, very high. But besides that, he's actually been very good lately. So he's interested to see that. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but like, he is interested to watch our old friend Blaine Gabbert play quarterback, because he thought it last week when he watched Gabbert, he saw some shades of Alex Smith playing quarterback. So I don't know what drugs that our super fan Charles is on, but all good, man. If you want to watch Blaine Gabbert play quarterback, be my guest. And for the Cowboys, our super fan Brian wants to see the first time that the three-headed monster in the backfield is going to be healthy, but the offensive line isn't going to be playing. I mean, some of the guys are going to be playing. I don't know who's not playing, but he said some of the guys are going to be sitting out. So he's interested to see how the undrafted rookie La'el Collins plays in his second game in the preseason.
He also mentioned Beasley. He says that he believes Beasley is going to become one of the top slot receivers in the league this year. This is like the delusions of Cowboys fans. I love it. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Let me just read Beasley's stats. You tell me, guys, if you think this sounds like one of the best slot receivers in the NFL. He's been in the league 3 years. These are his stats. First year, 128 yards, no touchdowns. Second year, 368 yards, two touchdowns. Last year, when he started to become a superstar, I guess, 420 yards, four touchdowns. Our slot receiver, Jordan Matthews, had 872 yards and eight touchdowns last year. So before you're even as good as a rookie, Beasley, you got to get a lot better. I wouldn't even say Jordan Matthews is one of the best slot receivers, and he has twice what you had in your third season. These Dallas fans kill me. It's crazy. It's as if he said that without even looking at, like, he clearly not even looking what a slot receiver should look like. And I understand Dallas hasn't had a good slot receiver in a decade. I mean, I can't even remember the last time they had somebody really strong in there. But, oh, I mean, yeah, just thought that was crazy. Just a crazy statement. Then the other thing that's interesting on that team is Byron Jones. His injury, that shoulder injury, I think that's very indicative of the problem of somebody like Byron Jones when you go for that workout warrior, that super athlete who may not be a football player. As we see, I mean, there's a lot of people in the Olympics every year who can run real fast and they don't become football players, because a football player, your body is more than an athlete. You have to be able to take punishment. And already Byron Jones is injured and off the field. I don't know. Interesting.
Well, to be fair to Brian, I mean, the Cole Beasley, the diminutive white guy, sort of looks like the ideal slot receiver. But I'm sure if he was on the Patriots, he'd hit like 2,000 yards or something. But
yeah,
he is on an upward trajectory by his stats. And there's also a lot of other mouths to feed in that offense. I liked what I saw out of him last year. Targets to put up the stats that will make him the top slot receiver in the league. But I do think that he is going to be a valuable piece to that offense this year.
He surprised me last year. I'll give you that. But he also cost them the Thanksgiving game. His fumble was the whole reason we won that game. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I heard somewhere yesterday that Cole Beasley over the last seven games was the second most targeted receiver in that offense. So if you just take over the last half of the season, I think that's a good projection of where he might end up being. If you take the last seven games and stretch over 16.
Yeah, I think he's probably the second best receiver. I mean, like, Dez is clearly the best, but I'd rather throw to Beasley than starting to get with Williams. I think Williams is falling. You know, he's not what he used to be.
All right, our final game, ladies and gentlemen, is on Monday Night Football. It is presented by ESPN. It is the Cincinnati Bengals at Tampa Bay. Our Australian in England, his name, English Simon, will be looking at 1, A.J. McCarron, 2, the D-line, 3, the secondary, 4, the tight ends. He's not going to stop watching preseason. Eifert versus Levante David should be interesting. I mentioned it last week. when you're watching tight ends in the preseason, man, you got to be careful. 5, Dalton in prime time. 6, Russell Bodine against Gerald McCoy. So he's got 6 items that he's watching for in this game. What's our Buck super fan?
The things that he's mentioned here, the big one he has here is his wide receiver rookie Kenny Bell. He is interested in, and also they want to see if this kid Sterling Moore is going to make it at nickel. So those are the two players he seems to be having an eye on. For me personally, with Tampa Bay, it's all about Jameis Winston. I watched a lot of I have, you know, NFL Rewind. I can watch condensed games. So like a lot of time, my evenings are sitting and watching just the first couple series of these preseason games. And to compare, after we've had that whole offseason of Jameis or Mariota, who's going to go first, to look at how those two guys did in their first game, it's totally clear, right? Like Jameis looked horrible. I'm really worried for Jameis Winston. I don't think they're going to have any chance this year. I think that team is going to be the worst in that division, and I think Jameis is going to really struggle. I'm not saying Jameis is done or he's a flop or a bust, but I think Mariota is going to come in with that horrible Tennessee team and actually play decently, and I think Jameis is going to struggle.
Yeah, I think a big reason for that is the offensive line of the Bucs. They just lost their best offensive lineman, Damar Dotson, for about 8 weeks. After that, they have very little on that line, and they make an argument they have the worst offensive line in football. And with a guy like Jameis, whose release isn't the fastest in the world, he's going to need time.
That's funny you said that. The release was exactly what I noticed. I've been watching Tebow, and like just shaming and covering my face as I watch Tebow in practice and in games, and it felt like that. It was that slow kind of getting it over the shoulder motion that just – doesn't look – you watch Mariota. I mean, 7 for 8. Incredible. Just no comparison.
I've heard great things about that Kenny Bell that they brought up. I heard he's been compared favorably to Hines Ward as being like just a beast of a blocker in the run game. So I'm excited to watch him play.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, for our previews of week 2 of the NFL preseason. If you want to check out everything that our super fans had to say, and the guys that didn't submit writings, we'll have them submitted within the next few hours here or so, because Mark is going to get on. Our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU podcast. You can also tweet us at NFU podcast. And you can send us those emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. We want to hear from you. We want you guys involved in the show, but you can't be involved if you don't send us emails. Mark, you'll be back again Sunday evening?
That is correct.
Or is English Simon filling in for you again?
No, it'll be me this Sunday, and we'll be wrapping up these games. Should be fun. Let's all hope no injuries this weekend, right, guys? The only thing bad that can happen in preseason, no injuries.
On that note, as I like to say, there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is 4 quarters long.